So I shared this in the 8 o'clock service, and it might surprise you, and maybe you take some convincing of this if you've ever heard me preach, but I have taken a class on preaching. It was called Becoming a Life-Changing Teacher and Preacher that Fred Creason preached and taught, and he had brought several preachers in, and we had guest speakers, and they would talk about how to preach, how to put together a sermon. One of the things I remember was this idea of introductions. They would tell you that you'd have to, when you write your introduction, you have to be sure to grab your people and hold them and not let go, because they've got so many things that go on in their lives, it's going to be tough for them not to be distracted by the time, you know, between you start and when you finish. And I'm going to tell you that this morning I have felt probably less pressure to do that today than maybe any other sermon I've preached. We're going to look in John chapter 11 today, and that passage is largely, you may have heard it at a funeral, and it's preached at funerals because it talks about the hope that we have in Jesus. And I feel like I say this all the time, but one of the great privileges of being a pastor is that you guys let me into your lives. And as I, your faces and your stories went through my mind as I was preparing for this, and I just know your hurt and your pain and your loss and your financial difficulties and your relational difficulties and all of the things that sin has brought into the world and that you study with. We're going to talk about today what the solution that the Bible has to speak to us about those problems today. And so I want you to be encouraged. You should be encouraged this morning as we walk through this scripture this morning. Brief background in chapters, you know, last week we were in chapter 10. We learned, Stephen led us through that Jesus was the good shepherd. Since that time, Jesus has buttoned heads with the Pharisees again, as he often did, and they threatened to stone him and drove Jesus and the Pharisees across the Jordan River, to the place where John was baptizing, it says in chapter 10, verse 40. And that's where we're going to pick up the narrative this morning. And so, read with me. We'll start chapter 11, we're going to start in verse 1. Now, a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him, saying, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Now listen, and this is important. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. You might find that odd, that he loves this three set of siblings so much that he stayed as opposed to gigging up and packing up and going to the place where he was. Verse 7. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him." After saying these things, he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover." Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought he meant taking rest in sleep. And so Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I am glad that I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him." So Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us go also that we may die with him." Thomas having his Eeyore moment that we just came from there, Lord, and they tried to stone you and you want to go back. Okay, we'll go and we'll die together. So how did this brings us from how the disciples and Jesus get to Bethany. We see that Jesus has this set of friends that are siblings. Mary, Martha, and Lazarus are our brothers and sisters. The sisters send word to Jesus, who does this curious thing, that because he loved these three, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. And we see why. Jesus says, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so the Son of God may be glorified through it." And then in verse 15, "And for your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe." We're going to hear that because Jesus loved these people, because of his concern for their belief is why he stayed. And so these several verses set the stage for our time together this morning. The meat of our discussion is going to be the dialogue that happens between Jesus and Mary and Martha. In parallel to those encounters and conversations, I want to lead us through another story which I'll introduce now. They told him they were crazy for scheduling a mid-October wedding. The threat of winter weather was real that late in the year, but the kaleidoscope of fall colors shimmering all around that small mountain church proved to be a beautiful beginning to their marriage. Brad and Sadie had met at a collegiate ministries event during Brad's senior year, and the two were soon engaged. After Brad's graduation, he worked a local internship while Sadie finished her final year at school. Following Sadie's graduation, Brad accepted a position with the company he had worked that internship, and the two moved into a small apartment together. Within 4 years, Brad and Sadie were playing zone defense against three small, energetic boys. In Bethany, Jesus first speaks with Martha, and he gives her the solution to death. Read with me, starting in verse 17. Now when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him. But Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." And Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world." Here Jesus lays out the solution to death and invites Martha to believe it. Do you believe this, that Jesus is the resurrection and the life? Initially, Martha's focus is hoping in the event of the resurrection. She was like the Pharisees in that they also believed in the resurrection. You'll remember in your New Testament, the Sanhedrin is the ruling body. It's made up of Pharisees and Sadducees. And one of the points of division between the two is the Pharisees believe in the resurrection and the Sadducees do not. Martha and the Pharisees believe in an end-time resurrection. And we see this short-sightedness of the Pharisees in that while Jesus is in front of them performing all of these miracles, the Pharisees are trying to kill him, right? They're looking forward to this end time and they hold to the resurrection, but the very, very hope of all Israel that's in front of their faces, they are trying to kill. Martha, too, is debating the future resurrection with the Messiah right in front of her. Her short-sightedness, the Pharisees' short-sightedness, can often be our short-sightedness. Brothers and sisters, we do not trust in an event. We do not look forward to the hope of heaven in and of itself, but we trust the Messiah. We trust Jesus. We do not trust in our obedience, but we trust in the one to whom we are obedient. Preacher, maybe you think, "Preacher, that's just a bunch of semantics and they're all the very same thing," and they're not, and I'll prove it to you. When I was growing up, I would be outdoors. We would go hunting and fishing and camping like anybody who's lived in Wyoming for longer than a week has probably done the same. And I remember as a small child, I would go places with my dad. And I can remember this one time we were on the rim of this canyon and we were hunting deer and we got buried in a bunch of snow. And I never remembered worrying about it, right? Because my dad would just get out and he would put the chains on the truck and then we would just spool up and get out of there. I never worried about it. I remember a big accident I had when I was a kid. We were both doubled up on a mule and a truck hit the mule that we were riding. I had blood on my brain. I tore up my elbow. It was a bad deal. And as a 42-year-old man, I can tell you and look at you this morning, I never worried about it. My dad was there. He was going to take care of it. And he did. Right? That's what you do as a dad. But a friend of mine, great friend of mine, who I've grown up since I've been in Casper, a great friend of mine, he never knew his dad growing up. He never knew his biological father. And so we would go hunting together a lot, and he would always have to know, you know, which turn, how did we get to X, Y, or Z? When did we turn left, and when did we turn right? And then he would always pack the most insane amount of junk in his pack because he had to be prepared for everything. He was scared because he had always known to rely on himself. He didn't have the relationship with his father that I had with my father. We do not trust an event, and I'm looking forward to heaven, but the hope that we have is in a Savior. The hope that we have is in Jesus Christ Himself. He is the resurrection and the life. What does that trust look like in Jesus? Let's check in on Brad and Sadie again. This young family grew and thrived in their local church. At home, Brad and Sadie would talk often about the brokenness of the world and the wreckage that sin had produced in their own hearts. They would point out to the boys that the anger that caused them to rage against each other at times was not something that they could fix simply with a sorry or a try harder not to do, but it was an example and proof of the sin that separated them from a good and holy God. Sin that they could never repair on their own, but that was the reason they heard so much about Jesus and a cross. During some conversations, their parents could quite literally see the gears turning behind the bright eyes of these young boys. In other days, their words would simply ricochet off of their uninterested faces. As the years went on, Joshua and Jeremiah prayed with their parents, speaking out loud their belief that Jesus died on the cross to pay for the sin that they could never pay for, and that they wanted to live their lives. They wanted to give their lives to Jesus to make them into whoever He wanted, at which His parents rejoiced. All while young Judah had been privy to all the same conversations their brothers had, he remained unconvinced. While Jesus invites us to trust Him, there are things in our lives that would stand between us and that trust. Verses 28 to 37. When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now when Mary came to see Jesus, to see where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" And they said to him, "Lord, come see." Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of this blind man also have kept this man from dying?" We see that their questions are raised against Jesus' claim. Jesus claims to these people, "I am the way and the truth and the life," and the resurrection here. But there are claims that stand in between our trust and belief in that. Here we find disappointment. Since Jesus' arrival in Bethany, everyone has expressed disappointment in Jesus that he was not there to rescue Lazarus from death. Mary and Martha voice the exact same words when they encounter Jesus. No doubt, since they had sent Jesus or sent the messenger on day one of this story, they had repeated to each other, "If the Lord will only be here, Lazarus will be made well." And now that he arrives, they say both exactly the same thing. "Lord, if you had been here, our brother would not have died." They are disappointed. They had this plan and it was going to work, and they knew Jesus and Jesus knew them. And so they sent the messenger, said, "Bring Jesus. Jesus will fix this." And Jesus comes, and he comes too late. And no doubt they felt betrayed by Jesus that he did not come as soon as he might have. They were disappointed. And I want you to note the maturity of the faith that we see here. Sometimes we look in the New Testament, we hear about Christians that are ready for milk, but they're not ready for meat. These are not those people. When Jesus talks to Martha, Martha gives the right answers, right? "You are the, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world." Who could answer any better than what Martha answered? And Mary, the only time we see Mary in all of the New Testament, she's always in the same place. She's at Jesus' feet. Because she gets it. She gets who she is, and she gets who he is, and we should all do the same thing. We could do no better than Mary than to be at Jesus' feet. These are people that have a mature faith, and their faith is being rocked right here. Maybe you guys know something about that. And in this disappointment, we can question whether God is able to do anything about our disappointment, our pain, and our suffering. The Jews in this consolation party wonder aloud, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying? Can't he do it?" Jesus weeps, sure, but can he do anything? How does that disappointment play out in the here and now? The grocery budget rose steadily as three small energetic boys grew to be three larger energetic boys. The cycles of birthdays, anniversaries, Christmases, and Easters came and went. The responsibilities at Brad's job grew, and so the hours to accomplish those tasks grew proportionately. Brad reasoned that the stress and the long hours were the root of his fatigue, but during the fall of Joshua's sophomore year in high school, Brad began losing weight, and following 2 weeks of Sadie's loving and firm encouragement to see a doctor, Brad finally relented. The test results seemed to take forever to process, but once the doctor gave the explanation, Sadie wished the results never would have come. Advanced cancer. Within 10 weeks of Brad's diagnosis, Sadie was left to sort out funeral arrangements and a life without her most trusted friend and the spiritual leader of their family. For 10 weeks, as Brad underwent treatment, Sadie prayed every day, several times a day, for Brad's healing. On the night Brad died, Sadie prayed some more. Lord, I know you're there, but I don't know how you could let this happen. You tell me to pray, and I prayed. You tell me that mustard seed faith can move mountains. Do I not have more than mustard seed faith? And yet I am here, and I prayed that Brad would be here with me, and he is not. I don't know how we raise three boys together. It will be impossible by myself. And without their father, how will Judah ever come to know who Jesus is? And as her head pounded and the echoes of her sobbing subsided, no answer came. Though we endure the tyranny of disappointment, pain, and suffering on earth, victory does not belong to these. I told you as I prepared this sermon, again, it was like a Rolodex of the lives that I get allowed to be in this church. And it is such an honor to be a pastor and have you share your vulnerabilities and your struggles and your pain with me. I have confessed to you that I have not dealt with the breadth of pain in my life that many of you have, but I know some. I do know what it is like to offer prayers that lose their formality and reverence and to sob and beg for relief and intervention. I know what it is to pray those prayers and hear silence. Thankfully, that silence is not the final word. Thankfully, while Jesus subjects himself to the same pain, disappointment, and suffering that we are subjected to, he does not suffer it indefinitely. Our Jesus displays his power as he forces death to its knees and releases Lazarus from the grave. Jesus gave demonstration of his power over death and a reason for faith in him to those Jews in Bethany on that day and to everyone gathered in this room in Casper on this day. And he accomplished victory over death a short time later in his own death, burial, and resurrection. Jesus' resurrection power proves he is victory over death. What might that hope for victory look like? Sadie's heart was heavy the day of the funeral, but she was caught off guard at how many times she smiled and laughed through the tears during the service as stories and memories were shared about Brad. The boys seemed to take the day well, and Sadie was buoyed by their constant hugs throughout the day. The visitors and cards came frequently over those first few weeks after Brad's death. Folks often remarked how they did not know what to say, but Sadie was just grateful to have somebody come and sit with her. Brad's brother came and replaced the hot water heater that gave out the day after the funeral. Men from the church took the boys fishing, and Judah finally gave his life to Jesus on one of those trips. Sadie's heart ached every time she thought about Brad, which was often. But the thoughts that brought that dull pain had a backdrop of peace. Peace that Brad was no longer draped in plastic tubes, exhausted and in pain. Peace that Brad knew Jesus, spoke of Jesus, and lived out his relationship with Jesus to everybody that knew him. Peace that Brad was with Jesus. And Sadie and the boys moved into a smaller home and cooked inside at the house more often. The boys continued to grow in size, and the family continued to grow in their faith while God continued to take care of them just as he had always done. How do we live in this victory amid the pain and suffering and death in the world? I want to look at this in two ways. First, a charge to the church. Notice that Jesus says does a lot when he weeps. It says Jesus weeps, wept. When disappointment comes, remember that the church is God's instrument in the world. Jesus weeps here with the family. Paul tells the Roman church to rejoice with those who rejoice and to weep with those who weep. So brothers and sisters, make your Jesus proud of you and enter into the pain of the people that are around you. And there's a lot that goes on. Send that text that sounds awkward in your head and you don't know what to say to encourage people in their struggles, but send it anyway. I don't have any answers other than this, what we're just talking about. Jesus Christ is the resurrection and the life. That's all I've got. And I love you, and maybe it sounds really weird if you're struggling today, and I call you, and I tell you as a man that I love you. But that love, that awkwardness, that willingness to step out into the pain and not stay in our own safe place where we don't know what your problems are, and we'll give them a passing wave. But let's step into that pain. Let's live with these people. Let's be the hands and feet that Jesus called us to be. Let's weep with those who weep. We just lost Miss Patty Patterson within the last couple of weeks, and I just think about her bringing that banana bread and giving it to people, and her making apple butter and giving it to her, because you know why? That's what she could do, and so she did it. But whatever we do, church, let's not do nothing. Philip Yancey, in his book, Where Is God When It Hurts, says the most beneficial thing we can do for those in pain is to be present with them and let them know they are not alone. And if you're not hurting or struggling today, you will. And if you have somebody sitting next to you today, they are struggling or hurting. Let's be the church and let's love one another and let's abhor our own comfort. And let's do what Jesus did and step into the pain that everybody else is feeling and weep with those who weep. Church. And those of you that are in these dark seasons right now, I encourage you not to ask why, but who. If an explanation for pain and suffering was what we needed, Jesus would have given it to us. But he doesn't. He doesn't give it to Job. He doesn't give it to Habakkuk. He doesn't give it to David. He doesn't give it to Paul. If having an answer and turning us into philosophy majors was what Jesus thought would be good for us, he would have done it. If it was good for us, he would have made it happen, but he doesn't, and it isn't. God doesn't give us an answer because we don't need an answer. What we need is a Savior, and that's what he gave us. God didn't put that on somebody else, as if somebody else or something else could have been sacrifice enough for our sin, but he took it upon himself to be that sacrifice that we need. Everybody in Wyoming has been camping at some point or another, and you probably slept in a tent. And sometimes in the dark nights, that tent feels the wind, and it starts flapping and threatens to get the roof tore off of it. And it would be absolute foolishness for me to walk out the door of my tent and unfasten it from the stakes that are driven into the earth as an anchor and expect things to get better. That's not how it works. What happens is we trust in the depth of the anchor of those stakes, and so we'll walk out the door and we'll cinch that tent even tighter to the anchor that we have. Brothers and sisters, that's my encouragement. If you're in a dark place today, cinch up your tent to those stakes. Do not forget in the darkness what you learned in the light. It is easy for us on a Sunday school morning or a Wednesday night for us to have the right answers to somebody else's problems. It's a different story for us to have the right answers to our own problems in the middle of that darkness, right? In the disappointment of our plans, in the pain and suffering of the world, Jesus Christ's resurrection power proves that he is victory over death. I want to ask something to those of you who are in dark places right now that I don't really feel like I have the right to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. that in the dark places in your lives, I'm going to ask you to profess your faith in Jesus. Because He is the resurrection and the life. And when we will do that in dark places, church, we get a stage or an opportunity to live in front of the world that hope that we have. It's easy on a sunshiny day to be one of Jesus's sons and daughters, right? It's a completely different thing, and it speaks volumes to the world when we will shout out, "I love Jesus in the midst of my pain." And so I'm going to ask you this morning that you would do that. Those of you that are in dark places, tell everybody you know about how good Jesus is. And church, I'm going to ask you, like we just talked about, don't stay where you are. Don't stay comfortable. Abhor the comfort of your own situation so that you can be the feet of Jesus to those people who need Jesus. It would be super cool, right, that we could just book a plane and go to Israel, right, and have a luncheon with Jesus at Cafe David. Wouldn't that be awesome? We would do that if we could do it, right? But he's ascended. And He left you here so that the people around you would know His love and know who He is. Abhor your comfort so that others can know the comfort of Jesus. And if you don't know Jesus today, and we talked about this idea about the tent flapping around and threatening to give way, if you don't know Jesus, there is a day that is coming that your roof is going to get tore off. And you will have nothing to trust in. You have no anchor. You have no stake driven into the ground. The only one that there is Jesus Christ. And don't wait. Aren't you tired of it by now? Aren't you tired of living a life where you have no anchor and you have no purpose and you don't know what happens tomorrow and you don't know why you're here today? There is a purpose. The God that made you with a purpose, and He loves you. Come to know Him today if you don't know Him.